So welcome to session one about the basic sound architecture. In the first two talks, we will learn more about the advanced Linux sound architecture, ALSA. And the next speaker is Takashi Iwai, who has written together with Frank van der Poel the ALSA MIDI sequencer, and who's working for SUSE right now and who's maintaining what is probably the most up-to-date and most advanced sound application series in a commercial Linux distribution. So.
Can you hear me?
No.
It's only micro.
Switched
off, huh?
Switched off.
Yeah.
Okay. Where is
on top?
Yeah. Hello.
Hello, hello. Can you hear me? Okay, right now. So, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Ladies. Nope. Oh, it's a pity. I didn't so much expect this much. Okay. Anyway, so let me introduce myself a little bit. I'm working on this ALSA project since, well, almost 4 or 5 years, but not from the beginning, but it's enough long time to have a history. And at this moment, I'm working at SUSE and Linux AG, and half concentrate on the some maintenance and development of ALSA project, and half I'm maintaining the packages on the SUSE product of, about audio and sound applications. Well, the outline of this presentation is shown here. At first, characteristics and history of ALSA, very briefly. And then I want to show some basic structure of ALSA, and then PCM and mixer interface a little bit, and the future works. That means the future work means the current problem. So the characteristics of ALSA, anyway, it's best to show that. First, it's easy to make, nice and smooth, sweet and delicious. Well, I guess some French audience might know what I mean. There is another ALSA. It's a famous brand in France. And more interestingly, on the back side of this product box, instruction how to cook it is shown. You see. Okay. So easy to make. It's just how to build other drivers. So let's go back to the virtual world. It's not a real product, but the virtual world. And our ALSA has stands for Advanced Linux Sound Architecture. And, well, in the future, it is not necessary to be ALSA. I mean, it's not necessary to be Linux only. But so far, well, there is no alternative, I see. So I guess in near future, still stand ALSA as ALSA. And the future of ALSA, it supports multi-platform as Linux kernel supports. And it's from the normal Intel architecture, Itanium, and, well, the AMD Hammer, Athlon 64 is so-called now, and Alpha, PPC, PerPC 64-bit, MIPS, ARM, Spark 64, and PA-RISC, and so on. At least these platforms are supported to confirm to work. And it's so many. Well, Paul said that Mac OS X is good. Yes, really it's good, but it's only for PPC so far. And Linux supports so much different architectures. This is one of the big advantages of Linux. Well, then the ALSA itself supports multiple cars and multiple devices. And so far, it supports up to 8 cars and at 8 PCMs, PCM devices, and 8 MIDIs per card. And each PCM device and each PCM MIDI device supports multiple, so many substreams. And so there are so many devices can work together. And other support and high-end sound cards from multi-channel 24/32 bits sample format and 9692 kHz and digital formats and so on. And other hot has a flexible and extensible control, and this is a mixer interface. And more importantly, and other, so many operations of other is done on user space. And we are trying to do more on the user space rather than on the kernel space. And other has a relatively good OSS compatibility, and it is still very important for the normal users. So we are still keeping, so trying to keep this compatibility as well as possible. So let's get back to the history of AZA. And it's nice to see how long AZA is being maintained and still so actively is being developed. And this plot shows CVS check-in statistics and how much CVS committed. And that doesn't mean how much lines of codes are changed, but just how much, how many times. And, well, interestingly, at the first, the statistics begin at 1999, January, and until the end of 2003, we have constantly check-ins. That means we are checking, changing the codes, still improving, developing the codes. And there, we can see some peaks here. Back. Yeah, here. About peaks. This is a phase. We are working on the version 0.5 and together with 0.6. And 0.6 was still only in CVS. And this didn't appear on the other table. And the first table release about the new version is here. And this is a very, also the large peak. This is just before trying to integrate the AZA on the 2.5 kernel. And you see 0.0, RC, then RC8, and here, a little bit outside, we have finally 0.091 final release. Yeah. Thanks. But it's also interesting to see how the version numbers are changed. It's obviously the version numbers releasing becoming slower and slower. I hope that it doesn't appear so happen in the future. We are trying to release better, so quick and better. So this is a structure of the basic structure of AZA diagram, and this is it's brought from the originary Jones, which depicted in the last Linux stack. I hope he didn't patent it. And see, this is a AZA library, and it plays many role. And this is a Linux kernel. After drivers, and these are some OSS applications too. And why we need the AZA library? Because at least we need to support so many things. There are so many different things. For example, even to pick up a format, sample format, we have so different formats. And for example, linear format has 8-bit, 16, 24-bit, and even 24 bits has three different at-least formats for signed little endian, and there can be big endian too, and 32 bits. And there is non-linear format, mural, arrow, float, ADPCM, MPEG, so on. And the plugins, this is a part, the core of the other library. Well, not the core, but it's a so very important part of the other library. And these plugins do magic thing. It converts automatically the samples, it converts the channel configurations, it shares the different one multiple channels hardware to with the different applications, or combine two different cards, sound cards, as if it is a one card. And there is also a new DMix plugin, and this will be explained by Yaroslav in the next talk, I think. And these plugins do very much work on the user space. And please remember that other is not always other driver, not on the kernel, but the very important part of other stands on the user space as other library. Okay, now let's see how the other native applications, the flow of the other native application. The other native applications communicate with other library, and plugins state here, and it can, as you can communicate directly with the hardware layer without even plugin layer. Anyway, other library communicates with the kernel API, with its own other kernel API. And as a driver communicates with hardware. This is a standard flow. And in the case of OSS emulation, as I said before, OSS emulation is still important. And because there are many users using OSS still, well, I would like to ask you, how many people here still using the OSS as a main purpose? Maybe many. So, yeah, that's true, really. Because if you run XMMS, then you're starting still OSS. Yes?
So one note that even though we are using Altamo pretty much all, so there are still huge amounts of applications that are for OSS and probably won't be ported because they are not maintained anymore.
That's
so
true.
If you look at Dave's pages, so
yeah,
so that OSS is important whether we want it or not.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks. Okay, then I will explain the OSS emulation, how to do that. And there are basically two ways. One way is a simple way, through the OSS emulation kernel module. And because OSS talks with a directory to the system call, open, close, IO control, read, write, and also mmap. And because of that, we need to give these system calls. And this OSS emulation module does that. This provides a system call for the other OSS, and it talks with other kernel driver and indirectly to audio hardware. The another way is basically it's more interesting. This is a way through the user space and using the OSS user space emulation library, libOSS. And for that, you need to set LD preload environment variable. This is a not so clean way, unfortunately. And by this LD preloaded library, this so covers this is loaded always before the application binary starts, and it well replaces the system call function so hooks, and it checks whether the specific device file is open, and if it is open, then it hooks the flow as an OSS emulation library. Otherwise, it's it works as usual open, close, normal system calls. And what is the merit of this user space emulation? The kernel module emulation, as I said, we don't need any so extra hack. But this needs a little bit still configuration in etc/modules.conf to load the modules automatically. Well, if you load the kernel OSS module by manually beforehand, then you don't have to do that. But if you do that automatically, then you need that. And device mapping is possible only via module option. That means not dynamically. And in comparison with the kernel module OSS emulation, the OSS library emulation has the following advantage. It is configured in the .asoundlc. Well, it sounds not like a so big advantage, but it is, in fact, because you can change on your home directory. And also, you can change, well, in runtime, before starting application and so on. And it uses the most important thing. It uses other plugins. That means you can root or combine two different cars, or every other function can be used as an OSS function. And of course, it supports OPCM formats, kernel OSS emulation does not support every format. For example, it doesn't support 24-bit 3-bytes packed format. And the other library support that. And it can also even mmap their multi-channel hardware as an OSS, normal OSS device. So now I'll talk about maybe driver. On other driver, because I titled that's about the other driver, so I need to talk mainly on other driver. Well, other driver is as usual Linux kernel module. It's written in C. This is a very big difference from other operation systems like Windows and Mac OS X. Mac OS X and Windows, they are written in C++. And because of that, we need to we have implemented many things to manage the devices and, well, flows more efficiently and more reliably. And basically, ASA driver has the following the structure. Each module, card module, so corresponds to a sound driver module, has top level. And top level detects the device, PCI, ESA, USB, anyway. And then if the device is found, it creates necessary components, PCMs, MIDI, well, OPA FM3, or sequencer stuff. And also it defines the destructors. And this destructor thing is, I think, the other specific, especially. And the creation of components and basically management, every important management is done in the other middle level, other common layer. There is a device manager, common device manager in other driver, and it handles the list of many different devices, and the as a main device manager, and it can call destructor of each different component as one call of one function call. And also PCM, raw MIDI, synthesizer, sequencer stuff, and timer, etc. What else? And these are managed by also the middle level functions. So, and basically, in that each sound driver code, you don't have to write any so complicated middle level functions to manage the PCM DMA transfer and so on. But you need to write only the low-level functions, which access to the directly to the hardware. Just and these low-level functions are defined as callback functions. And in the case of C++, such an implementation will be different. We will have in the middle level, this middle level functions would be as a class, certain class, and it will be supersedes to a device driver class object. And low-level functions would be implemented as a each method of the superseded in the classes. Anyway, we have no C++, and I guess we will not also have C++ support in the Linux kernel in the near future. Then we need to stick with that. And it works very well. Okay. And okay, we have many different hardwares even on this audio field. And we had ESA. We have, yeah, still ESA devices. All the good things. It works very well. And the restriction of that as a hardware is that it supports only 60 megabyte DMA space usually. And nowadays we have PCI devices. PCI devices have been used in very wide range of area. And astonishingly, is most of devices use AC97 codecs. And it's very frequent question that why my AC97 codec is not supported on the other driver. I don't see any driver names. It's called, for example, CS4205. And always answer is that because it is AC97, it's different from the core function of the sound driver itself. And the PCI devices, yeah, usually it works very well, but still have problems with memory allocation sometimes. And because some PCI devices have the restricted DMA mask, and they don't support the full 32-bit. And unfortunately, Linux kernel doesn't handle such a restricted memory allocation very well. So we need to implement a wrapper function to handle this kind of memory allocation much a little bit better. And there will be the problem of the allocation of huge, big, continuous physical area. And it can happen quite often on some high-end sound cores with multiple, the multi-channel, because such device needs very big buffers, which is continuous physical memory area. And if you run the operation systems for a long time, then always use very different places of memory areas. Then you cannot get the big memory block to allocate as a buffer. In consequence, you can only very small area, 32 kilobytes or 16 kilobytes, even if you have 1 gigabyte memory RAM on your machine. There are some newcomers in this area, USB devices. They are getting more popular and popular now. Many companies are selling USB devices. And there have been problems, especially in the USB MIDI, because of incompatible protocols. They didn't follow to the standard protocol, but they use their own vendor-specific protocols. And but nowadays it has been supported very well on the other driver. And the current devices still have many problems about the bandwidth. The bandwidth of the USB 1.1 is very low. You have only about 6 channels, or at most 6 channels. And the interesting change about by introducing USB devices is the support of hot plug. And I think that Elsa will talk about hot plug in the next talk. And we had to manage the drivers to be which can be terminated at any time, because it was a little bit challenge. And another type of devices, PCMCIA, only a few devices, but they exist. And HDSP, Hammerhall DSP, it's working quite well. And also now there is a VX Pocket. And I think there is also another device from ecosystem, but I've never seen that. This PCMCIA device needs also hot plug. We need to handle that. And usually PCMCIA devices need firmware. And there are two different type of PCMCIA devices. One is a PC card. And this is a little bit difficult to manage the resources, because resources assigned later on after the module is loaded and transmitted by the card manager program to the module itself. Then the driver has to configure the I/O space and memory allocation and so on later as a callback. And anyway, there is another type, card bus. This is very simple, which is compatible with PCI, as if it's so. Then it's the writing that is not so difficult than PC card itself, but still we need to take care about the hot plug, for example, or firmware loading stuff, so on. And now forthcoming, the FireWire. I myself have not seen this stuff, not investigated well, but it's and there are, I think, not so many devices available. And it's still a question how to handle. How should we handle that? Is it on the more stuff on the kernel side or more stuff on user space? I think it's possible to implement more stuff, driver stuff, on the user space, because IEEE 1394 implementation on Linux is better than USB, I can say. In fact, it's even possible to implement the USB driver on the user space. But the problem of the USB is we need to implement isochronous transfer. This means in the case of USB 1.1, the data packet will be sent each 1 millisecond. That means we need to handle from the interrupt each 1 millisecond to the user space side. And the battery, this isochronous on the USB 1.1 is not configurable. The 1 millisecond is fixed. And this, and also the implementation of USB DevFS device file system is not suited to implement this isochronous transfer on the user side. There is a very poor poll and so interrupt handling on that. That's why I wrote USB audio devices on the kernel side at first. Of course, I wanted to do on the user space at first, but I gave up. And I hoped on FireWire their situation would be better than USB. And I'm not sure how about USB 2. USB 2 is this isochronous transfer is more configurable, and the situation will be different from USB 1. But because we already have USB 1 kernel driver, we will have USB 2 even stay on the kernel, maybe. Okay, then about memory management. As I said before, memory allocation is one of the wireless stuff in Linux kernel. And memory allocation on the other, we are using standard Linux functions. So we follow the normal Linux way. But we are providing the uniform API for different bus types. And that is, I think it's a good way, because it's seen as identical even in different bus types, like SBUS or PCI or ESA. And some chips are supported on different buses. For example, Cirrus Logic CS4236, this is supported on ESA or ESA on PCI, and also in an SBUS. And by using the uniform API, we can write more consistently a driver. The problem of regarding to large continuous physical memory, we have the following two solutions. And we provide an so-called pre-allocation. And this works like that. And the buffers are allocated and beforehand at the time the sound driver module is loaded, not at the time the sound PCM device is opened and the buffer is allocated. Before that, we allocate the buffers and keep that. And usually it works, because at that time, sound driver is loaded, it's usually at the early stage, and the whole memory area is not so fragmented, not so cut and hacked, not so hacked. And this pre-allocation can be configured via PROC interface. Then you can even pre-allocate the whole 32 substreams. And as a default, we are allocating four streams per PCM. But it's possible to allocate all substreams and keep these few megabyte buffers as my own buffer. And recently, the implementation of this for this problem is the buffer cache. And we keep these pre-allocated buffers in an independent module. And this is good to reloading or unloading the module, sound modules, and loading the sound driver again to start. Because the buffers are kept in an individual module, and we can reuse that. And in near future, we will implement two method to preserve buffers at the time this buffer cache module is loaded. And this is especially necessary for the devices like Hammerfall, as Paul a week before suggested. And it's not implemented yet, but it will be in the near future. It must not be difficult. And I think it's better to implement it in a more generic way. Because not only the Hammerfall, but also MB24 devices or any other multi-channel hardwares need such a buffer preservation. Okay, there are different buffer types. And the normal PCI devices have the linear buffer, which must be continuous on the physical area. And for such a hardware, we needed the buffer pre-allocation and buffer preservation methods. And there are other devices which support scatter-gather buffering. And for example, Sandblaster Live, or Trident 4D, NX, or VR chip, or Intel ICH. These chips support page table or buffer descriptors, so-called that. And for such devices, we don't need to allocate the big continuous area, but we need to allocate each small pages, so each small kernel page, which usually consists of 4 kilobytes, and from different places, and combine different pages on the single page table. And on the other driver, these pages are also mapped on the Linux kernel page table as a virtually linear table. And so you can see if you mmap this scatter-gather buffer, you see as it's a linear buffer. And also we need to take care about in the case of the hardware buffer on the memory mapped I/O. And on the Intel architecture, this hardware buffer on MMIO can be mmapped, and you can read and write directly on this such a hardware. But not all architectures support that, and in such a case, we need to copy the data from between the hardware buffer and the user buffer, so that doesn't support mmap. And some hardwares do not support DMA, and we need to copy by ourselves in interrupts or in task switch, usually in task switch in the loop. And or some hardware devices have special hardware buffer which need to copy. And for such a case, we need to prepare intermediate buffer to be accessed from the applications. And these buffers can be scatter-gather, and which can be allocated by vmalloc usually. Anyway, and this intermediate buffer can be mmapped, but it doesn't meet mmap supports so direct mapping from the hardware buffer in this case. And one of the very complicated example of buffer handling is Sandblaster Live. Because Sandblaster Live supports a hardware web table synthesizer, and we need to handle very small fragments of buffers. And in this case, we have basically 2 tables for the pages. And at first, we have the virtual memory page table. And this is not directly related with hardware, but it's only for the other driver. And as default, it has a limit 128 megabytes, but it's configurable by the module option. And this page table manages the each PCM stream, synthesizer, web table, instruments, and so on. And the each PCM buffer is mapped on at first on this virtual memory page table. And since the instrument is mapped there too. And please note that each these blocks are different, this contiguous 4 kilobyte page table. And this can be placed in different ways, in different places. And at first, we gather these different places to one big virtual page table. And unfortunately, Sandblaster Live has only 32 megabyte hardware page table. And to handle 32 megabyte page table and with 100 megabyte web table synthesizers, we need to remap these memory blocks dynamically to on the copied from P virtual page table to hardware page table. And on the other driver, PCM buffers are preserved. It has more priority than the synthesizer table. And other driver looks for the empty block here. And if the driver doesn't find any empty block, then it try to remove the not unused memory block. And then map again from the virtual memory page table to the hardware page table. Well, it's enough complicated. And there have been many questions. There are often questions about memory mapping. And we should do mmap or not. Of course, mmap is a very good tool. It's a magic. It is a very good invention, like, well, and it gives you more efficient way of the communication between user space and kernel space. No copy of data between buffers, and that means you don't need any two buffers. And even and besides, other maps the control record too. That means it's minimized to the communication between context switching between kernel and user space. But of course, there is a drawback. Not all devices support mmap, and mmap API is different from the standard read and write API from the other. And there are also solvable on the other app. I think it's something so exaggerated to use always to use mmap, for example, for the simple playback purpose. I've seen the mmap is also used, for example, with the XMMS ASA plugin, output plugin. But it's not, I think, suitable because if you mmap, then you have only the limited size of the buffer. And if you do the copy between buffers, you can have more buffers before that. That is very implementation detail issue. Well, but what I can say is that you can use mmap in most cases very well, and especially for the you should use mmap for the real time applications. But it doesn't matter if you use for example Jack, yeah. But if you want to write an application which talks with directory to the other, then you should think that mmap or not mmap. So small comments about mixers. Now, other mixers is handled as using a standard control API. So there is no longer mixer device, the kernel device. And each control element consists of an ID and data type and data. The ID is the name, string, and index number. And the control API, so control interface handles simply the many control elements and which is distinguished from the its ID. So it's a plain, so it's kind of so plain database using a key of the name string and the ID index integer. And because of that, we need to map or compose some control elements, so mixer elements, as one OSS mixer element. And for example, 9 in and OSS corresponds to 9 playback volume, 9 playback switch, 9 capture volume, 9 capture switch, and also it can be in a member of capture source enumerated list. And as a mixer, OSS mixer emulation module does this job. It's called it checks the different mixed elements and combine or also compose some kind of group of elements as one mixer type. The problem of this the current mixer interface is that there are too many mixer elements, and we have no structure for these mixer elements. We have simply only a plain database. And why there are so many mixer elements? Because most of sound chips support really different things. For example, digital SPDR output, or mono, or headphone. But these functions are not always implemented on the hardware. You don't have, so you have unlikely no digital output or mono output on your notebook. But Mixer shows that because the sound chip supports. And it's the problem is it'll be difficult to detect the existence of such parts. And on some drivers, we have the controls per PCM stream. And the typical case was SoundBlaster Live. And the former version, we showed all hundreds of mixer elements as starting the driver. And you maybe were surprised by starting the other mixer on the SoundBlaster Live and how much, hundreds of sound mixers on right side where still continues up to the end of mixer elements. And we had some structural routing information about mixers on the former version, 0.5, but it was removed because of the complexity on the driver side. So therefore, we need to handle the card-specific mixer topology on the user side, or the user space side. That means we need external database for that, for each device. And this is still open question. How we implement that? It should be which format? In XML or It's a very good question. And how to implement the GUI graphical user interface? This is a very big important question. Whether we need to, we use a script language, or we write programs in other toolkits. So, the closing the talk, I would like to note some future works and to-dos. And so far, there is no good way to handle clock and sample rate synchronization of PCM. If the the typical case is synchronize the PCM with the SPDIF or ADAT input. And if the, or if we want to just lock the sample rate with the incoming stream, and if the incoming stream sample rate changes, how should we handle that? And it's still not implemented well. And also, there are some hardwares which accept an MPEG or so encoded streams. And in such a case, we have a problem because MPEG can have a variable bitrate. And we assume that the bitrate is constant so far. Yeah, it's how to handle that. It's still a question and future work. So for PCM, number of PCM devices are limited to 8 per card. And it might be a problem for some devices how to do. And basically, this is a limitation of minor device. And I hope in 2.6, 2.5, or later kernel, we will have more larger space for the device file, device inode. Then we will have a more free devices for that. And ASAM RC configurator, yeah, it will be really nice. Yeah, and it'd be nice if we have so good looking eye candy GUI. Another topic is re-implementation of other sequencer, and which part of other sequencer or whole part should go to the user space, or how to handle that. Well, we can discuss it later. So that's end. So resources are written here, and I will put an HTTP version and the next week, and then you can all describe and you can access maybe in the next week. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Takashi. Mm-hmm. Any questions from the audience on this slightly technical topic?
Yeah.
No? Oh, there is one.
You talk about the portability of ALSA. Mm-hmm. How difficult would it be to port it to microkernel? Has it already been ported to another kernel than Linux?
Another kernel? You mean that Linux or other OS kernel? Well, I've heard that the former version 0.5 was ported to QNX once, and some guy said that he's porting other 0.9 to OS 2. But for other OS, I don't know. But porting to that to other OS is not from technical view, it will be not too difficult. Just but of course it depends on the kernel. But for example, to BSD or so, it's family, it's possible, at least, without so too much difficulty.
Okay, another question?
Some of the people here might not be really clear on what DMX is and what it does. Can mm-hmm. you explain that a bit? Also, could you explain, is it in 091?
09, yes, DMX.
Okay, could you maybe... tell us a little bit more about it, and also tell us how it's used.
Oh, DMX. Well, I think also if we talk about that in the next talk, then maybe he can explain better, much better than I. But it's basically DMX is good. It mixes the PCM streams from the different processes, and even without having the master thread. This is a very important thing.
Yes, I have a question to that and also to the user space sequencing stuff. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of users are using X as windowing system, mm-hmm. and they might want to have network transparency alongside. Mm-hmm. with a user space implementation of DMX and the sequencer. What are your plans about this?
Well, user space sequencer, yes, this is a good question, and about the special network. And so far, I have not planned about networking the other library plugin, but it's, of course, possible. And about the network sequencer stuff, the question is, we accept the latency between a network, and if we want to synchronize two different machines over network, and how can the timing will be so synchronized between them? Because there is already a sequencer client which communicates over TCP/IP between two different machines.
Yes.
And yeah, the question is whether this implementation is kept, or I think it's a better way to implement a network library, so such like a plugin on the user space sequencer core, and which communicates
just with other machines of the sequencer core between them. So directly without going through the client. Okay.
Yes, okay. I think we can discuss this later in technical detail, maybe.
Yeah, technical details.
Any more?
Okay.
Some time ago, I think Richard Stallman started a discussion about firmware in Linux source code would violate the GPL. How do you handle this?
In most cases, the firmware binaries are given from the hardware vendors. And hardware binaries are binaries, but it's data. And it's handled as a data. And it's not their program. And you don't have to put the data as open. I mean, the binary is binary in the case of only the data binary. So the driver code itself is, of course, GPL in most cases. But the firmware we accept as a binary. Because otherwise, no hardware vendors want to give their driver spec. And maybe we will put some more firmware data onto the outside of the kernel. We are trying to more so remove the binary data from the kernel side, so that the binary data is so not touched, so in a gray area.
Okay, so I think at this point we stop the question session. So we have a few minutes for the next talk. Thank you very much, Takashi.
Yeah, thank you.
Just one small note from myself. I forgot to say that we'll try to collect all of the slides from the talks and have them online on the page in the middle. That's W3.